From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Legislative and Political Director for the National Association of Postal Supervisors, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. Today we have with us a special guest, an institution in the postal community, Bill McAllister. Bill has covered the postal world for almost a generation. He started with the Wall Street Journal and local Virginia newsprint. He was an editor and reporter for the Washington Post for almost 25 years, and that's sort of where we're going to focus our attention. He also was Washington Bureau Chief for Media News Group, and he is currently the Washington correspondent for Lynn's Stamp News, which has around 50,000 current subscribers. Welcome to Naps Chat, Bill.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Bill, let me ask you this question. How did you find yourself in the postal world and covering the postal beat?
Well, it goes back to my childhood, actually. I collected stamps as a youngster, and I was always curious how the Postal Service selected subjects for its stamps. So when I became a member of the national staff at the Post, one of the first stories I did was how they picked subjects for their stamps. And it just grew from that. I started writing a column for the Post on stamps and coins, a weekly column. And then I had a chance to start covering the Postal Service in full when somebody who preceded me there had decided to go on to another beat. And I've always been fascinated by the Postal Service and how it operates. And just as I was as a youngster, I grew up in a town where when the mail came in to the post office, it was a big event in a small town in North Carolina where I grew up.
Thanks a lot, Bill. What we want to talk about today and what we've discussed is pivotal moments in postal history. And we are currently at a pivotal moment that the Postal Service is in a dire financial situation, in part due to the coronavirus pandemic. It also has reached a pivotal moment because we have just hired a new Postmaster General, or more accurately, the Board of Governors just hired a new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy from North Carolina, your home state.
Yes.
I want to talk with you about is to turn the clock back to 1992, thereabouts, when you were covering the postal beat for the Washington Post. And at that time, Marvin Runyon, the Postmaster General that still makes waves in Washington, and his footprint is still firmly established at L'Enfant Plaza, became Postmaster General. Talk to me a little bit about 1992 and about the hiring of Postmaster General Marvin Runyon.
Well, from what I've been able to gather from people who looked back at that era, the Board of Governors at that time was not happy with their current Postmaster General, who was a guy who was very popular among postal workers, Tony Frank from San Francisco. And I think he was probably also tired of the board and its dealings, and they wanted somebody a little more different, and they wanted someone who would follow their orders, the board did. And that's really what set the stage for Runyon, was the board came to him and said, look, we've got a problem here. The Postal Service chief is not following our orders. We want somebody who'll follow our orders, and here's what we think is wrong with the Postal Service. Now, people I've talked to say that was a pretty critical thing, because what Marvin Runyon, just like the new Postmaster General, was picked several weeks before he actually came to Washington. And what Runyon did in those weeks was he called in the department heads from the Postal Service one by one. They went down to Nashville to his home and met with him. The meetings, according to uh, those people I've talked to were pretty traumatic. Runyon basically told a number of them he didn't want them around. They should go look elsewhere for jobs. And that just sort of set a tone for what happened when he took office. Because when he took office, one of the most important things he did was called everybody into a big meeting at the Benjamin Franklin room up in the upper level of L'Enfant Plaza. And basically, he laid out his scenario for what he wanted to do, which was largely cut jobs. He came in, and I think this was at the prompting of the board, told them they had too many officers, and he immediately started cutting officers. I think they had 42 officers under Tony Frank. After about 120 days, Runyon had cut it down to 24. And that was pretty critical, I think, in setting the next couple of years under Runyon, because I think in that respect, he made some mistakes. He, as some people say, parked some very important people who could have helped him with the history and the problems of the Postal Service. He kept the Deputy Postmaster General in place, Michael Coughlin, but he didn't pay as much attention to him as he probably should have. And that was the case across the bureaucracy. He made some deep cuts, and those deep cuts, I think, were what got him in trouble pretty quickly in the early 90s, because under Runyon, the mail just went kapooey. Letters weren't being delivered. There were some very angry hearings on Capitol Hill, and apparently the board had to have another meeting with Runyon, which they basically told him that he had to get the mail moving, which is always job one for the Postmaster General, or they were going to make some more changes. And basically, his job came to be at stake. I think that happened in part because Runyon, with his cuts in personnel, he lost a lot of really critical, what I call, middle management people, both in processing plants and in the headquarters. And these were the people who really knew how to oil the wheels, make the system work. And without those people, the wheels sort of came off, and that posed a very big problem for Runyon. But the important thing about Runyon, I think, to remember was he came from the outside. And then if you look at the history of the Postal Service since it became independent, not that many people have come directly from the outside. Most of the people who've run the Postal Service have come from the inside. And I think that the board at this time probably felt the same pressures that they felt back in the days when they had Tony Frank. They thought a fresh start could do it. And clearly the current board is probably the most political board I've seen since that. The selection of Mr. DeJoy was a political act, I think, by people who were trying to heed what the president wanted. This takes you back, like you said, to the old days when the Postal Service was always run by a political person appointed by a president.
Yeah, let me interrupt you at this point, Bill.
Sure.
What I want to caution or sort of full disclosure, the intent here is not to prejudge Louis DeJoy's tenure as Postmaster General, but one needs to have perspective. History gives perspective, and what we're doing here is creating the perspective. You know, as George Santayana said, and it's almost cliche, those who do not learn from history are condemned to repeat it. Now, picking up on what you just referenced about historically about postmaster generals, prior to postal reorganization of 1971, the postmaster general was a member of the president's cabinet. A number of instances, or more than a handful of instances, they were the chairman of the Democratic or the Republican Party. For example, under President Eisenhower, Arthur Summerfield was the postmaster general. Under Lyndon Johnson, Larry O'Brien, the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, was the Postmaster General. Winton Blunt, who was the last Postmaster General who served in the cabinet, was actually very active as a Southeast Regional Coordinator for the Nixon's presidential campaign. So there's the bringing in of DeJoy, who at the very least has a strong political relationship to the President of the United States. Some would claim to be nostalgic. Some would tend to characterize it as being about towards a regression to where the Postal Service used to be a political institution. You know, from your knowledge of the Postal Service, what are the dangers of the Postal Service becoming once again a political institution?
Well, let me back up a minute and say that what my years of watching the Postal Service and seeing its current problem, I think one of the things that happened in 1971 when the Postal Service became independent of the federal bureaucracy, literally, by this act that created what they call an independent establishment in the executive branch, was it severed the Postal Service from having a spokesman for it at a higher level. And really, it sort of severed a lot of congressional responsibility for overseeing the Postal Service. To me, one of the things that was good about the old system was when the postal system had a problem, the Postmaster General could go to his boss, the president, and say, help us. You've got to get us more money. You've got to get us whatever we need. That went away in 71. And I think that, to my perspective, has been one of the losses. Now, you may not like what the current president says about the Postal Service, and he talks a lot about it. But if he felt more responsible for the Postal Service, that would be a good thing, because the Postmaster General, whoever he is, doesn't really have the platform that the president has to hammer the needs of the Postal Service to the Congress. The Congress, one of my shocks in watching it over the years, has been how the Congress has sort of become totally disengaged from feeling any responsibility for the Postal Service. The only thing they feel responsible for is naming the post office for somebody from their community. That's not the type of responsibility the Postal Service needs, in my opinion. It needs somebody to really watch over the overall shape of the organization and voice its needs. And the Congress needs to realize that it can't operate as it currently operates, which is in a deficit. It really needs to be more self-reliant and self-independent. But anyway, I think the other thing I would say is that you don't want to talk about joy, but I think when you talk about Runyon, the people I've talked to who were there tell me that really right now was the critical period for DeJoy, because if you learn at the lessons of Marvin Runyon, the lesson is that he started the way he started out, and the way he started out was based on what the board told him they wanted and what he saw as his mandate. And these early weeks before he actually took office were critical weeks for Runyon, because he made decisions based on what he saw even before he got to LaFont Plaza. Now, I don't know what Mr. DeJoy is doing now, but I do think we all know what he's been told by the president he thinks is wrong with the agency. So those are going to be things to look for. But if you look at Runyon, you have to look at those early weeks, because that's where he started out. And he made critical decisions on personnel in that time. But the legacy of Marvin Runyon is much more than just personnel, although I will tell you honestly that over the years in talking to postal personnel, it is his tenure was very traumatic to the workers, and it was very traumatic, and it still has scars in the bureaucracy of people he moved and downplayed, didn't listen to, people who left. But Runyon has a much bigger legacy than just the personnel, because although I must say, I remember vividly one of the first things that happened was something called Camp Runyon, where he basically exiled a lot of postal workers and executives out in Merrifield, and they were trying to find new jobs. By some standards, it was he was eager to buy them out and gave them time to try to find jobs elsewhere, and supposedly helped them through Camp Runyon. But it was still a very traumatic time for the workers that is well remembered down there at postal headquarters.
When you were talking about the Board of Governors sort of giving a mandate to Postmaster General Runyon, two action items that concerned the Postal Board of Governors at that moment were constantly escalating rates, in their view,
yeah,
as well as depressed service. Service was people were complaining. In contrast, now, the demands are that the postal, at least we're hearing from the White House, that the postal rates are too low on certain products.
Right.
And to everyone's, I mean, to the chagrin of a lot of postal critics, the consumer satisfaction, American satisfaction with the postal service is at all-time highs. Like the most recent poll that I saw was like over 90% of Americans, whether they be Republican or Democrat, are very happy with the postal service. So there are different pressures that will be on the new Postmaster General than were on Postmaster General Runyon.
That's true. And I think that board that hired Runyon was truly independent. It was not, they didn't get rid of Tony Frank because they of any pressure, outside pressure. Although Trump had made no secret of the fact that he didn't like Postmaster General Brennan and wanted her out of the way. But he discovered he couldn't do it. But he does now have a board that is very sympathetic to him. And I think that when you look at the shape of what's ahead, you probably will have a more presidential influence over the Postal Service going forward. But to get back to Runyon, I was trying to recall some of what his low point was probably the mail disaster in the early 90s when the mail wasn't delivered. And as I was saying earlier, that's job one for the Postmaster General. But looking back, I think one of his greatest shortcomings was that he failed to anticipate the internet and how severe it could damage the first-class mail. There were people in the Postal Service in those years, and I remember this vividly. A friend of mine came to me and said they just had a meeting on the Post Office of the Future, and that one of the futurists down there at headquarters had told him that the internet had peaked. And I think that was a feeling that was shared in postal headquarters by not a few people, that the internet was sort of a passing phase and that the Postal Service could ride it out like it had ridden out other innovations, the telegraph, telephone, and whatnot. But I think if you look at the whole of the Runyon years, that was one thing that the Postal Service should have been more aggressive on. It should have had a better appreciation for what the internet was and what it could do to their primary product, really, first-class mail. And I would say that there were other things, though, that were that made Runyon interesting as a postmaster general. And he did some very creative and innovative things. For example, I think one of the most innovative things he did was he ordered up self-adhesive postage stamps. The bureaucracy knew how to make them, but they wanted to sell them at a premium. And Runyon said, no, you got to sell them at the regular price, and you got to sell them to everybody, and you've got to make it the standard. That was a clear consumer win-win, I think, and was something that Runyon came to understand. He tried to change the logo of the Postal Service.
Yeah, the Sonic Eagle.
The Sonic Eagle, yes, that was his baby, and he pushed that hard. I remember after he did it, he found that the Postal Inspection Service or Postal Police didn't have it on their uniform or their logo, and he wanted everybody to use the Sonic Eagle. He was very proud of that, and he thought of that very song strongly. I would also say that Runyon, while he was feared by a lot of the people in the bureaucracy, he personally did have a PR sense about how to communicate, and he would never say no comment to a story. He would always want his PR people to come out and say and put the PR spin on it as to the way he wanted it to come out. That was very helpful
Now he hired
something you don't see these days.
And now he hired a very political spokesperson for the Postal. He hired former White House press secretary Larry Speaks and that was an extraordinarily political move for him.
It was, and he hoped Larry could help him out, but actually, I think Larry was responding. They got the PM. He made a very important policy declaration to Congress that the Postal Service needed to change and needed a new business model. Larry Speaks told him that proposal was dead on arrival. And as a result of that, Runyon retreated and stopped being the zealous advocate with Congress that he should have been. Other postmasters general have basically told me that you got to be willing to take the hits, and you got to be willing to say, well, that's the way they want it. We can't get everything. And you have to sort of be the sacrificial lamb. You have to float the trial balloons, and you have to push for them constantly. Larry's influence on Runyon was not to fight, was to just walk away. And I think that was a big mistake that Runyon made. Because, like I was saying earlier, when you've got an idea like that, you need some help selling it. And if you can't call on a president or the White House to back you up, theoretically you can. You don't have to be an appointee if you have a friendship to the president, which Mr. Joy, for example, will have. But I think that is really an important part of being the Postmaster General is you're a promoter. You've got to be willing to sell the Congress. And I don't think Runyon was very comfortable doing that. Certainly not as comfortable as some of the other people I've seen as Postmaster General have been, because it is a hard job, and he didn't always enjoy the hard parts of it. In many ways, he seemed to be reclusive. He wasn't comfortable meeting lots of people. He admitted he couldn't remember names, and he didn't do the glad handling that postmasters general really have to do, especially on Capitol Hill.
What's interesting also is if you look at the longevity of postmaster generals coming out from the private sector, whether it be Marvin Runyon or Tony Frank or Bob Tisch who came out of Lowe's Corporation, I think the average was the average number of years as postmaster general was slightly less than 3 years. If you look at career postal employees, you're looking at an average of over 7 years. So when you say they're not comfortable, they don't like the job, you know, maybe it's a cultural change for them. Those are distinctions that are striking.
It is, and I think that does reflect just how the job has evolved. I do think that whoever is the Postmaster General today is going to face building relationships with Congress. That is really almost the most important role I ever believe these guys play is I remember Whitten Blunt talking at a seminar about how he got the Congress to agree to take the old Post Office Department out of the cabinet and make it an independent agency. And he literally wined and dined members of Congress. He'd have them in his office for breakfast. He would have them for lunch. You know, it was a nonstop and a very intense effort he had to make to sell the idea that the Postal Service should be independent.
Yeah, interesting. And on that note, I recall Bill Henderson, who the Postmaster General who succeeded Marvin Runyon, would go on extended fishing trips with the chairman of the Postal Committee in the Senate, Ted Stevens, Alaskan salmon fishing all the time. When you talk about glad handling with members of Congress, in particular, you know.
Well, I've often just on a Ted Stevens note, I've often been fearful that the Postal Service depended, and they did depend on very heavily, Ted Stevens' support through those years. And he was a critical supporter of the Postal Service. He was head of the Appropriations Committee. And if they needed money, I remember him telling a Postmaster General one time, if you just need a couple of billion, come see me, and said that in public. Unfortunately, there still aren't as many people in Congress who are as friendly to the Postal Service and understand its role as well as Ted Stevens did. Mm-hmm. He knew his state was dependent on the Postal Service, and he was unabashed about going about getting programs and things that would benefit Alaska from the Postal Service.
Yeah, I just want to ask one last question.
Okay.
And that is, when you say about relying on Congress, and I want to compare the situation with newly hired Postmaster General and Marvin Runyon. Postmaster General Runyon was hired around 5 months before the 92 presidential election, where there was a change in the White House.
Yes.
Congress retained its, you know, I think the House retained its partisanship, its Democratic partisanship at that in the 92 election. Senate, I don't recall, but the players, it was pretty bipartisan postal support in the Senate in any case. We're now approaching the 2020 election, where there's around 5 months, 6 months left before the next presidential election. It is arguably possible that the same situation could confront Postmaster General DeJoy, that he could theoretically be a holdover from this administration into the next administration and dealing with the same political crosswinds that come from that switch.
That's true. And one of the interesting points about that is that for some reason, Congress has not filled all the seats on the Postal Board of Governors. And there are at least two more nominations sitting on the Hill. Clearly, they don't have a quorum right now. So they're going to need either a new deputy postmaster general, which I think DeJoy will help select, obviously. But there's a void there, and I don't know what will happen to the Board of Governors if there is a change in administration. Clearly, you would think Trump and the Republicans in the Senate would move more quickly on his nominations for the board, but that hasn't seemed to happen.
Bill, this has been a great stroll down memory lane. Thank you for continuing to cover the postal beat over at Lynn Stamp News. Any parting words for our listeners?
Well, no, I just keep writing letters and sending them in, literally. That's one of the things that's happening to the Postal Service, is that people are forgetting the great service that they perform every day, delivering letters and packages. And if you want to see the Postal Service survive, the key is send a letter.
Thanks a lot, Bill, for your time today. And for those of you out there, be safe and be healthy. Until next week.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make